Hello and welcome to The Indoorsman for another week. We continue to be your podcast guide to the great indoors, and I continue to be your host, Matt.
I'm still Cliff.
Good job. Consistency is key.
I worked hard on still being me over this last week.
It's good. Some nice self-care there. Well done. Mm. It has been a week. Hey, guess what? We released an episode on time last week.
Totally on time.
Yeah. Totally super on time. Definitely not late at all.
Exactly. The timestamps I'm hoping were backdated.
Exactly accurate.
Excellent.
That's what I did, probably. So, yeah, let's continue that trend and do another totally on time episode that definitely came out at the right time on time.
Exactly. I will open up by saying if you weren't able to get onto our website from about midweek through to yesterday, or download anything from that same period, that was an issue with the domain. It needed to be renewed, but on the web panel that we use, it didn't actually show up, so I couldn't actually renew it, and I didn't get a notice for it either. But I've got that fixed up now, and it's all sorted, so it's now back online.
Very good.
Yeah, so that would be why there was a bit of a hiccup there.
Yeah, so back to normal for everything on you guys' end now, if not very soon. But in other news, there's some stuff to talk about this week, Cliff.
There is. There's a couple of things to talk about. I don't know if there's lots to talk about.
Well, from my little checklist here, we're going to be talking a lot about movies this week.
Cool.
But before we get into that, what have you been playing this week? I bet I can guess.
Well, if you
is
can.
It PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds?
I have played a bunch of that, yes.
Ding.
And there's another game as well.
Also, Star Wars Battlefront?
No.
Ooh. Solitaire?
No, actually. No. Mm. No, I'm not buying into that, the Battlefront bullshit.
I thought you were going to go on a tirade against Solitaire for a second.
No. I got no beef with Solitaire. I actually quite enjoy the various forms of card games. Like me some Free Cell. Nice. And Spider Solitaire too. Like Spider Solitaire.
I remember Spider Solitaire. Mm. Okay, well, if it's not Solitaire, Spider, or otherwise, what is the other thing you've been playing?
Destiny 2.
Of course, I should have guessed that
shocks no one.
Yep. Again, consistency is key.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good. Are they still good games?
They're still very good games.
I saw that Destiny's getting Curse of Osiris as the next raid?
It is, and it's coming out first week of December, it seems.
Is it coming out simultaneously for everyone this time, though?
I think they're just going to dissolve 6 weeks of the PC run and just pretend that it all happened at once. Which, you know, cool, but kind of fuck you guys as well.
I guess that's the best kind of resolution of the situation, if nothing else.
I'm assuming they're just ignoring that that happened.
Probably.
Yeah, which is a bit shit, because it just means we've got to rush through it. And what's also shit is that my friends still aren't high enough to raid, so we haven't actually done the first raid yet. So what will happen is that the new bit will come out, we'll get a bunch of gear that will instantly overgear us for the raid, and we won't actually do it properly and experience it, which is a bit annoying.
Nice.
Hmm.
Well, I have also been playing some video games this week.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, I finished Fire Emblem Warriors, which I quite enjoyed. It felt shorter than Hyrule Warriors, the Zelda one they did a couple of years ago. But overall, pretty satisfying. I think there's DLC coming for it in the form of story chapters or something, so I might circle back on that. They've also got this history mode, which is basically recreating some, you know, historic battles from previous Fire Emblem games in this kind of action combat form. They're a bit more meaty than I thought they would be, because they kind of present them as little screenshots that are kind of in the look of the top-down classic Fire Emblem aesthetic. So I figured, oh, that's just kind of a representation of how the battlefield will be laid out. But it's actually every little enemy icon is a separate combat scenario that you go through working up to the big final battle.
Mm-hmm.
So as opposed to being like a half hour to blast through each of these history maps, it looks like it could be a solid couple of hours per thing. So I might dig into that, or I might not, because there's so many other things to play. such as Assassin's Creed Origins, which I'm still playing. But I did get very angry at it this week.
Really?
Yes. So this Assassin's Creed is much more sort of an open world RPG, a la Skyrim or something like that, as opposed to the more sort of story-driven plus diversions open world that they've done in the past. So one of the things they've introduced is these kind of calendared out timed quests where it'll be sort of a special event mission that's only available for X period of time.
The Trials of Anubis?
Trials of Anubis was the first one.
Yep.
Which is you find a glitch in the Animus and you go out and you get to fight Anubis in the desert, which is cool. It's a big, long, extended combat thing, so all different kind of...
It's a boss fight, basically.
Battle mechanics. Yeah, it's like a raid boss fight for this game, because you have staged sort of move sets and all this kind of stuff, and at the end you get part one of a really cool sort of armor and weapon set. The problem is, it's a timed event that was launched 3 weeks after the game came out, and the level requirement for this mission is level 40.
Mm-hmm.
I had not been playing it every minute of every day up until this point, because A, I've got a job, B, I've got other games to play, because your game came out on Hell Day, Ubisoft. So I was only like level 20 with the amount of sort of casual hours I've been able to put into the game. And this leveling system, normally, you know, for this kind of stuff, you could maybe fudge it at a lower level if you're really skilled. But in this thing, I got through the first two combat sections, and then Anubis spawned some little sort of skeleton mummy soldier things who could one hit kill me as they swarmed me all together at the same time.
They did say level 40.
Yeah, but setting the level so high so soon after the game came out, especially when this is a game that is stuffed to the gills with microtransactions, time savers that help you play the game less time to still get the experience, which means you don't level, it's pretty shitty. Like, set the level lower if you're starting at 40. Like, I had a look at the world map, and each kind of mini region of the world map shows the kind of suggested level range, so you don't sort of run off in the wrong direction and get destroyed. And I think the highest level shown on any region is 38. So this is basically post-game content that's been released less than a month after it came out. And it's bullshit.
You just gotta play the game more, man.
Apparently, because now I've missed that timed event and I can never get that unique piece of content ever again unless they release it as like paid DLC or something down the track. Which, I know it's just an armor set, but it's a shitty model because their games have been angling more towards casual players over the years so that you can, yes, pay your way or just play on easy or whatever. And this is kind of saying, nah, fuck you, which is shitty because it also only ran for like a week, I think.
It's the same with the Hitman and the Elusive Targets.
If I bought have just game, been announced as returning.
I was going to say, like, if I bought the game now, I couldn't play all the Elusive Targets, which is pretty shit.
Yeah. Thankfully, in the last 24 hours, news has come out saying that is not the case anymore.
Yeah, that, it's dumb that that's the case.
But again, Hitman was released as a season instead of a complete game, so the understanding was that content would be parceled out over the first year, and then they released the complete edition. This is a game where you pay full retail price up front, and yeah, it's just, it's pissed me off.
I mean, even though it's a season thing, like, it's still, the window opens for the Elusive Target, and then once it closed, that was it, so.
Yeah.
It's still the same bullshit, like, if you weren't ready for it, or weren't able to do it in that time, then you were screwed.
Exactly, if you're, you know, it's the same argument as always, not everyone can afford to buy every game on launch.
And play if it, you buy the game on schedule as well.
Yeah, if you buy a game a year after it comes out when it's reached an achievable price for, you know, a lower budget or something like that...
Not gouging bastards.
Yeah, you're not going to get to enjoy this content. And the fact that I'm a person who did buy it day one and still didn't have time to enjoy the content is saying something. So, I mean, the game itself is good. I'm liking it more the more I play it. But it's just these little things that piss me off.
Well, clearly the solution here is stop collecting moons and instead level.
Well, I haven't picked up Mario Odyssey this week, so yes, I have been collecting silica in Assassin's Creed Origins instead, which I don't know what it's for, but it glows, so it's probably important.
If you can, if it glows and you can pick it up, it's definitely used for something.
Yep. Mm. But speaking of moons, another game that I've been playing for the last couple of days, at least, is Pokemon Ultra Moon, Nintendo were kind enough to send a copy over.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
I haven't had a lot of time to get into it yet, but it's been established. It's not a sequel game in the way that Black 2 and White 2 were a couple generations ago. It's like a director's cut of Sun and Moon kind of thing. So it's the same overall story with some extra stuff added in.
It's like playing Pokemon Yellow after you've played Red or Blue.
Kind of, yeah. There's some hints early on at kind of the new story content. The opening kind of cutscene, and it's still weird to say opening cutscene for a Pokemon game, I'll put that out there, is Lily running away with this Pokemon she's rescued from a lab, and instead of just generic goons who face down against her to kind of trap her, it's some goons and also these new, what are they called? The Ultra Recon Squad, who are kind of the ultra baddies in this new version of the game that will become more important in late game. So they kind of make a cameo appearance and then pop in at the end of one of the other cutscenes early in the game and kind of nod towards there being more content down the track. But to begin with, it doesn't seem like a lot is different.
Right.
For me, the biggest change is I went from the Sun version originally to Ultra Moon. So the biggest change there is that the clock is reversed. So night is day, day is night for Moon. So if I play during the day, it's nighttime. Or more likely, if I play during the day in the game, it'll be nighttime in the real world. Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, there's been some graphical tweaks. The game definitely is a bit smoother and a bit prettier. I also noticed that, you know, it's always been a tradition in the Pokemon games that the kid has the current Pokemon, current Nintendo home console in their room.
Mm-hmm.
And since Sun and Moon were released last year, that it now has the Switch in his room, which is lovingly and detailingly rendered and does get a very slow pan across it in one of the cutscenes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I so far I'm enjoying the game, but it does feel kind of the same to begin with. I am only a few hours in though, so I will have to keep plowing away through it and sort of get to that later game content where it does start to diverge more before I form a full opinion.
Yeah, it's still the same Pokemon game in my mind.
Kind of. I mean, yeah, I'm interested to see how much new stuff there is down the track, because funnily enough, the back cover of the box, it's very much about trying to say how it's different. You know, normally the spiel would be like, oh, become a Pokemon adventurer and catch them all and explore Alola. But this one's just like, here is a list of reasons why this one is different and you can buy it even though you bought the original.
Yeah, it's like, here's the justification for you spending more money on a game that we didn't really work that hard on.
I mean, they did work pretty hard on it. It was a big step forward for the game overall. This one, yeah, not as much. It's a refinement. So I think it's definitely justifiable if you didn't pick up Sun and Moon. I will get back to you all on whether it's justifiable as a pre-existing Sun and Moon player once I've put a bit more time into it. I did only get it on like Thursday, so I haven't had a huge amount of play time in between trying to power level in Assassin's Creed for when the next timed event comes up and I'm expected to be level 312 or something. But yeah,
video games. You get to 40 and I'll be like, you need to be level 50 now.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm level 33 at the moment. So yeah, getting there. Refusing to pay any microtransactions.
You should see what you get out of it, though. The sword you get out of it, or the sword that I saw come out of it, was insane.
Fuck you.
It was like two hitting level like 35s or something. Like, it was just nuts. It was like bang dead.
Also, go to hell, the hilt, you trash.
The pommel on the sword is an Anubis head.
I mean, yeah, of course it is. I'm more interested in the armor. I really like that the armor is cosmetic in this as opposed to stat-driven. I think I said that in a previous episode. But I really enjoy running out, looking however I want. Also, being able to toggle on his beard and hair, that's pretty cool, even if they don't tell you you can do it.
Ah. I saw in the video I saw of it, the guys that were running through it, you know, they also saw a whole bunch of articles before the game came out and shortly after the game came out saying that, they've been very faithful. They've done a lot of research. It's very, not truthful, but kind of like they spent a lot of time putting a lot of detail in from that particular time era. The armor that I saw that this character was wearing looks like science fiction armor from like 1,000 years in the future.
I'm sure, like, the as in any Assassin's Creed game, there's kind of collectible reward armor. So I think there's 2 or 3 different specialty sets you can get in the late game.
That warped somehow back from, like, 4,000 years in the future back to ancient Egypt.
Yeah, that are very kind of going easy on the historical accuracy.
Mm-hmm. There's glowing some of the shit on them.
Yeah. Some of the tombs you can go into have a secondary tomb hidden under them, which is sort of, you know, the ones who came before prehistory stuff. There's high level enemies roaming the countryside after an early mission called the Falakatai, who are like super cops, and if they see you they fight you and they're super high level, so you have to go around and kill all 10 of them. I've killed 7 at this point, no big deal. And also there's other collectibles. I can't even remember what the third set is, but there's something that's being tracked in the game for every time I do a thing. So I assume I'll get some sort of reward out of that in the end. But on top of that, you've got the microtransaction paid costumes where you can look like a soldier of Anubis or a mummy or a pharaoh. And I also got freebie costumes from previous Assassin's Creed games, which do not look good in this game. Because if you think back, it's Ezio from the original... Oh, sorry, Ezio from Assassin's Creed 2 and Altair from Assassin's Creed 1. So very white, very heavily covered, does not look right in the Egyptian desert at all. Mostly I've stuck to... There's a couple of... Egyptian/African tribal outfits that are cool because they're not symmetrical and they've got lots of detail and patterns on them, so look nice. Or there's an early mission where you go into a bathhouse to murder a guy and then you can run around in a towel for the rest of the game. So I kind of toggle between those for kind of coolness and ridiculousness.
Cool. Should we use that the microtransaction segue to talk about the big chunk of news from this week?
We definitely should.
Yeah.
Last week we did spend a good chunk of time talking about Star Wars Battlefront 2 and its ridiculous microtransaction prices. Clearly, EA were listening, because the day after we put out that episode, they walked that one back a bit.
Yeah, and it seemed like they were stepping all over the shop, backwards, forwards.
They were
a ministry of silly walking around on this one.
Yes, so the initial announcement was that the price of all of those hero unlocks, so Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader and all the rest, would be reduced by 75%, which is a big jump. Unfortunately, it also came out after that the rewards you would get for completing things to get those credits that you used to buy them in the first place would also be reduced by 75%. Not great, EA.
Mm-hmm.
No, and then after that, they decided to disable microtransactions entirely for now.
After one of the most downvoted threads on Reddit, and then an AMA that just was like...
Oh yeah, I saw the AMA.
5 or 6 Titanics going down after that. The first thread was the Titanic sinking, and then the AMA was just a series of Titanics, one after another, just like going straight into the iceberg and down.
I was also reading that there was pressure put onto them from Disney to remove or disable microtransactions based on all the bad press it was getting, on top of everything actually coming from the general public.
Oh boy.
So yeah, for now, microtransactions have been disabled entirely in the game, which is good but also bad. Because from listening to some other podcasts and reading news about this game that I never plan on playing, it seems like the actual credit income in-game is super low, and that's what you use to unlock loot boxes and everything as well. So it's kind of putting people at a disadvantage, not being able to pay for microtransactions at all. So there's a thing in the game, star cards, which are like ability modifiers or something for the hero characters.
So yeah, like you can equip like a certain, I think it's up to 3 cards for various things, yeah. And it gives you some utility basically.
Yeah, so from my understanding, it was you could sort of put modifiers onto their moveset, or some of them are cosmetic or something like that.
You can do things like increase your health, increase your speed,
yeah.
Reload, no, not reload speed, but like it doesn't have a reload, it's got a cooldown effect. So if you fire too much, your gun heats up, it's got a cooldown. So there's reducing on that. And, you know, just being able to throw like different types of grenades and stuff like that. So it's all, yeah, there's all
that kind of normal modifier stuff.
Yeah.
But if, for one thing, you can get those star cards for characters you don't have yet. And also you can get duplicates because they come out of loot boxes. You can cash them in for credits, but I think I heard someone say you only get 500... Oh, so 50 or 100 credits per traded back card. And the unlock costs, even with the 75% discounts, are like 10,000 credits.
Yeah, for the high end, for Vader and Luke or something, it's...
yeah, so the first like big characters you can unlock, so they're the lowest tier pricing for them, and it's still 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a mess, is mm-hmm. what it is. I actually found it really interesting that Screenplay, the Australian TV show about gaming, who tend to be pretty positive or optimistic about games in the most part, they don't give a number score for the games. It's okay, maybe, or no way, and they both gave it maybe or no way, which is pretty insane for a, like, AAA and then some title like Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Yeah, and... it's a gorgeous-looking game. The beta ran amazingly on my PC. It's just a shame that it was tanked, basically, by bullshit transactions.
Yeah, because everything I've seen in reviews and coverage for the game says that the game experience itself is really enjoyable. It's just everything that's tacked onto it, having 3 different currencies and all of this microtransaction nonsense and the grind requirement, are what take away from it.
Yeah, so that, you know... it could have been such a great game, but it's now forever tarnished.
Yeah.
Like No Man's Sky. It shit happened bad at the start, and forever it's going to be that known for that.
So it'll be interesting to see what kind of knock-on effect this will have, because, like, Assassin's Creed Unity, to kind of step back to Assassin's Creed for a second, had the same thing when it released on current-gen consoles 4 years ago now, actually. The PlayStation 4 has been around for that long. So Unity was a mess and had microtransactions that added to the mess. And then Syndicate the next year was a step in the right direction, but wasn't perfect. So they took 2 years off. And Origins is now the game that's come back from that. And it kind of acts like a reboot of the entire series as far as kind of focus, aesthetic, and gameplay style. So if Battlefronts had this much drama, what's going to happen? Like, they've already killed the Star Wars game I actually wanted to play. So what's happening next?
Yeah, who knows? We'll see if we ever get anything good.
Yeah, because, come on guys, you shit-canned Star Wars 1313 and Visceral's game. I don't want to play Battlefront, especially with all this nonsense. Give me a game I want to play.
Traditionally, Star Wars games have been very, very good. X-Wing vs. TIE Fighter, that stuff, and then the Dark Forces games, the Jedi Knight Academy games.
Yep.
That's the
Republic. LEGO games are pretty fun.
I mean, the LEGO games, I barely count because that's just a LEGO game with a Star Wars skin.
Which is all I need sometimes. Yeah.
But you can instantly, like, if you just want to play like a dumb... like Star Wars game, you just play Lego, just like if you want to play a dumb Lord of the Rings game, you play Lego Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, I need to circle back to Shadow of War that got lost in the Hell Day mix. Maybe that'll be a good thing to cool me down from Assassin's Creed Origins. No way to have to play it forever to get the levels. All right. So Battlefront 2. I'll be interested to see what we get to say about this game next week's episode. Because it seems like they are falling over themselves to announce and re-announce stuff.
Hell, it might be free to play next week.
Oh, God, can you imagine?
Mm.
That would be catastrophic for them, but honestly not that unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
Oof. So, moving on, pretty much everything else I've got down is TV and movie related, unless there's anything you want to inject first.
No, let's do some quickfire TV movie stuff.
Okay. Well, actually, one more thing that's not directly movie related. The Game Award nominees were announced during the week. Fun fact, Survivor was one of the judging panel, so we had some input into what games you can vote for in the various categories.
Let me guess. So
that was pretty cool for us.
Nintendo tops a bunch of categories.
Well, actually, surprisingly, no. One thing that we found, one of the categories was best handheld game, or handheld category, whatever. We kind of presumed that that would include the Switch. It did not.
Hmm. So they kind of want it to be... So it's supposed to be both, but it's not...
Yeah, handheld, I guess, encompasses... I mean, not even mobile, because I'm pretty sure they had a separate mobile category.
So basically, like, the best the DS game.
Yeah.
Cool.
And the DS... well, I in talking to friend of the show, Pete, I was looking at the pre-orders available for 3DS on EB Games' website. There are 4 games at this stage. One of them is a new style boutique game, so... One of them is a Mario Party, and then 2 other, I think, anime-type games, one of which I actually care about because it's Shin Megami Tensei. But that's it. That's all that's on the cards for 3DS at this stage, pretty much.
Cool, cool.
So that one is retiring shortly. Yeah, so the Game Award nominations are up. I think you can go vote on it now. And it's cool because we're listed as one of the international judges on the website.
That's pretty sweet.
Which feels very professional.
Hmm.
Alongside, you know, Kotaku and IGN and all those other big boys, there's also Survivor.
And now you can be corrupt like the rest of them.
Yeah. Ah, yes.
Can't wait for like a few months until a scandal comes out.
Yeah. Although actually that was in the news. The games journalists in America, I think, are unionizing.
Interesting.
Which is pretty cool because, yes, there was announcements, things like 2 staffers at IGN have sort of come forwards as being sort of badly treated by a senior staff member or former senior staff member, I believe. And IGN put out a statement saying, you know, we've failed our employees, not just the ones affected directly by this, but everyone else. And then, yeah, this Vox Union, I think they called it, is coming forwards, which will... map pretty closely to how traditional journalists are unionized to give them the same sort of rights and protections and all that kind of stuff. So between this and the fact that video game voice actors recently sort of won over in their strike, it seems like everyone's getting their shit together, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it seems like they're kind of cleaning it up because there's some very dodgy practices that happen with developers and some of the big guns. Liquidating, like, you know, hiring a bunch of people than just like liquidating entire things. Similar to what happens with movie, big budget VFX stuff, they'll hire like people at like barely any wage and then just like evaporate entire departments and the entire crews. Just like, nah. So you just go from like crew to crew basically doing movie work.
Yeah. And for the voice actor stuff, honestly, I wasn't following it that closely. I knew the effect it was having, things like Life is Strange Before the Storm, the prequel to the Life is Strange episodic game. The main character was no longer voiced by Ashley Birch because she was a participant in the strike, which makes the girl who took over from her a scab, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that kind of stuff. But when I read a little bit about kind of the conditions and stuff that have been introduced as part of this strike being successful, it's things like... developers have to tell them what character they're auditioning for, whether it's a small-time appearance or a large appearance, and whether it has a potential to be recurring, and also whether or not they're taking over from a previous actor who played the role, which all seems like pretty basic stuff to know. Mm. Apparently, yeah, previous to this, voice actors could be made to sign a contract for a game without knowing first what they were signing on the dotted line for.
Which is dodgy for very obvious reasons.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and other stuff like if there's going to be swear words or, you know, culturally or racially insensitive content that they'll have to present as part of this character, they have to be told about that up front. Because, I mean, can you imagine being someone who's pretty socially and politically conscious, unwillingly and unwittingly falling into a role where they have to play someone who's incredibly bigoted? That would be uncomfortable.
In other words, someone just all of a sudden having to play Trevor from GTA 5.
Yeah.
And not knowing that they were playing Trevor. And it turns out they're like a, you know, an Orthodox Catholic person.
Exactly. Because, yeah, there were these, not protections, but I guess lack of constrictions saying that developers didn't have to announce this stuff, but they could penalize an actor if they tried to back out.
Yeah. Which is fair enough. Yeah. You should be made aware of what you're actually doing before you're doing it.
Exactly. It seems like such common sense, but much like games journalism, because it's a relatively new field, it just didn't have those kind of precautions in place. So, yeah, that's our kind of actual intelligent discussion for the week. Let's talk about movies now.
Yep, let's do it.
So, I've got a whole list,
mm-hmm.
And they're not in any particular order, so here we go. Firstly, the studio behind Despicable Me and the Minions movies, there are rumors saying that they might be making a full-length Super Mario movie in CGI.
And it won't be as cool as the 90s Mario movie.
It will not. I am a big fan of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Hoskins. So sad. Yeah, so there might be an animated movie. I'm thrilled at the concept because like that aesthetic from the Mario games over the last few years is really pretty. Present that to me in a full cinematic experience and I'd be very happy. How are you going to make Mario talk for a 60 to 90 minute movie, though?
I bet it will be shit.
Oh, yeah, who knows how it'll end.
I'm not sure Mario is the kind of deep character that I'm going to give a crap about for that amount of time where I'm not just running around doing dumb shit.
Maybe this is why they were laying the groundwork saying that he's no longer a plumber to prepare him to be a more diverse and depth-filled character. Not that that really comes across in Super Mario Odyssey, of course. There's a little bit of characterization in there, but he still doesn't talk. And anytime Charles Martinet, who is the voice of Mario, something I forgot to say in last week's episode when we were talking about this at the end, anytime he says a line that is more than three words, it sounds bad. you know, Mamma Mia, let's a go, oh no, all those are fine. But I think it was the end of the Mario Galaxy games, he'd go, thank you so much for playing my game, and it just sounded bad. And I can't imagine...
Mario's not a charismatic and deep and...
no.
He's not a character that can hold any type of screen time, I don't think.
I cannot imagine him delivering an on-screen monologue at the climax of a battle with Bowser.
No, this movie's going to be shit. I'm calling it straight away.
Oh, unless they take sort of an alternative route in the vein of like Wreck-It Ralph or something, I can maybe see something like that working. But yeah, if Mario's going to be a central character, something needs to happen. He either needs to have a reason not to talk, or he needs to learn how to talk like a human being.
Yeah, I was going to say, he needs to talk like a normal person, not like a weird, like, racist Italian caricature.
Yeah. Although, then we'd have a situation like the character of Old Snake, or Big Boss, sorry, being handed off to a new actor, a la Kiefer Sutherland, which was jarring, but ultimately fine.
It's going to be terrible. I'm calling it now.
It could well be. Thank you so much for seeing my movie. Let's go. Spaghetti. Yeah, so that's something that might happen. Isn't actually confirmed, just kind of rumored. What's not rumored and is actually confirmed and happened overnight is that a teaser was released for The Incredibles 2.
Which I haven't watched yet, so... yeah, I knew it came out, but I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
I saw... 2 days ago, someone retweeted a post from the Disney Twitter saying soon and having sort of an animated Incredibles logo. I assumed it would be a real trailer. No, it's a teaser trailer.
No.
It doesn't show much, but it does show kind of that the graphics have taken a step forwards, obviously, because it's been 3,000 years since The Incredibles came out. Still an amazing movie, though.
Still probably the best Pixar movie that's ever come out.
Definitely and up there.
Possibly the best superhero movie. Up there with The Dark Knight, the best superhero movie ever made.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's coming next year sometime. I think that's all they've said.
June. I thought I had a date.
June 2018. Yep. Yes, sorry. Yeah, I'm keen for that. You know what? You could have just put Edna Mode on screen for 30 seconds and I would have been very happy.
She is hilarious.
Oh, man, I love her.
No capes.
That's why I don't wear capes.
Speaking of teaser trailers, are we going to talk about the Deadpool 2 teaser?
Yes, that is, in fact, next on my list.
Holy shit, was this not the best video of the week?
It was. Definitely go watch it if you haven't already. It pays homage to Bob Ross in a very explicit way. And
boy, is it good.
And then at the very end, there's a smash cut of scenes from the actual movie, which there have been videos breaking down the individual shots and sort of pulling out all the specific references and characters and all that stuff. I have not looked at that.
This is what I want from a Deadpool trailer. I don't want to know the entire story of Deadpool before it happens. I want him in a bunch of sketches, doing dumb and funny shit, and then just show a couple of smash cuts of action to get me excited. Show a bit more of Cable every time until I get an actual shot of Cable, maybe hear his voice as we get to the last trailer.
I haven't heard his voice yet.
Yeah, but don't give us too much. Come to your senses, Hollywood. Stop giving us too much in trailers. Deadpool is the perfect funny sketch kind of guy.
Yeah, and I mean, yes, that kind of rapid fire sort of scene flash at the end is there if you want to dig in deeper.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I did pull away from it is that Negasonic Teenage Warhead
looks awesome. Has
a classic X-Men costume that actually looks great.
She's got the mohawky thing going on. It looks awesome.
Yeah, and she's got the classic blue and yellow sort of X uniform, which they tried in First Class. Did not look great there, I think.
She also had it in the first Deadpool as well. She had that weird yellowy costume.
Yeah, she had the yellow, but it wasn't the blue and yellow primary monstrosity.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm really glad.
Good in that one shot.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. And yeah, lots of little sort of nods that other characters will be returning. I won't dig too deep because I don't want to ruin anyone who wants to go in blind.
Did you?
I will say that Blind Al is there though, because that's just too easy a reference.
Yeah. Did you notice all the color names at the start?
Yes, I did.
I'm looking at it. I saw one. I'm like, okay, cool. That's kind of funny. Then I saw Soylent Green. I'm like, okay, this is amazing.
And not to forget Betty White.
Yeah, Betty White. The yellow snow and mix that in with some Betty White.
Yep. So then,
then we got the whack off right here. Wax off the brush, just like Bob Ross does.
Yep. Oh boy. And a very nice piece of Thanksgiving art showing the cast as well. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I'm very happy to see Dupinder in there as well. Love me some Dupinder from the first one.
Oh, he was so good.
Mm-hmm.
Man, so that's another movie I'm looking forward to next year. That one has an actual date, but I don't remember what it is.
It's mid next year. It's June, July next year.
Yeah. Okay, so it's going to be a busy time.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else have we got? Sticking with the Marvel trend, there has been murmurs that the next kind of independent mutant-y movie that they want to make is focusing on Multiple Man, Jamie Madrox.
Mm-hmm.
And they have pegged James Franco as the actor they want to play him, which I can see working.
Interesting. I mean, he is a great sort of character. Actor.
Yeah.
So you can just have him as a bunch of
Yeah, and I've not read heaps of stuff that's focused on Jamie Madrox. I know he's on that team with Shatterstar and stuff like that. X-Force?
You know what I hope they do? I hope they do some sort of weird, fucked up, mind-bending thing where you're not ever sure which one's the original.
Which is a thing they've played on in the comics.
Yeah, get to the end and you have no idea if he is the original is still there or was even in the movie at all. That would be fun. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Now, is it him or is it Multiplex from the DC side that duplicates every time he gets hurt?
I don't think it's X-Men, dude.
Yeah, I think it might be Multiplex from DC's side. Yeah, but the stuff I have read of Multiple Man he sort of started off being unable to control the division of himself into multiple men, which drove him kind of crazy. But then eventually they had situations where there was just so many of them out there. They were living all these individual lives, taking on their own identities. So it could be an opportunity for James Franco to play a bunch of variations on a theme a la Orphan Blank and Tatiana Maslany, which I don't know if anyone can do it as well as Tatiana, but maybe we'll find out if they do go ahead with this movie with him. But yeah, I'm kind of excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be a fun movie. If I don't know how up to date you are with the DC TV shows at the moment, but
anyway, up to date.
Flash have done a little bit of a run on that in a recent-ish episode with multiple Harrison Wellses turning up again.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Which is always good because Ed Kavanagh is very good at playing weird characters.
Mm-hmm. Another great character actor.
Mm-hmm. Get him to be multiple man.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, don't.
Just get multiple men.
Yes.
Do like the, what was the Heath Ledger one? After he died, he was in the middle of, and then they got like Johnny Depp and like all those.
Is that the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus?
Yeah, yeah. Just do that. Yeah. Where there's just, it's the same guy, but just played by like five different great character actors.
You know what? Have multiple men from multiple universes.
Yeah.
And just mash them all together.
It can just be like that, a Spidey clone saga all over again.
Oh, God help us. So that's another thing that might be happening. In other trailer news, though, a trailer came out for a movie I did know was being made, and I wish wasn't, Rampage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll see any movie with The Rock in it.
I don't know if this could save it. Rampage, it just looks bad. I'm sorry, it just looks bad. It's a game that was about people turning into monsters and smashing buildings, and they're trying to turn that into an emotional narrative. And it didn't work for Battleship. Don't think it's going to work here.
Well, there's no Rihanna in this one, is there?
Not that I know of, but they haven't announced voice actors for the giant gorilla or the giant wolf or the giant lizard person.
I mean, I'm sure one of them, if not all of them, will be Alan Tudyk.
All right, I'll play that. I don't care about this movie at all in any form.
I don't care about it, just like I don't care about Jumanji 2, but I'll watch him because it's got The Rock in it.
Oh, yeah, Jumanji 2. Yeah. Is it actually called Jumanji 2?
Electric Boogaloo. I don't know. I think maybe it's called Jumanji 2.
Or is it just called Jumanji again?
I don't know. He can even keep up with this. But I'll watch it because of The Rock and because it's got Karen Gillian in it. And she's great.
I'll watch it if someone else pays for the ticket or when it comes out on Netflix.
Yeah, I'm not going to go to the cinema. Put that up front. I'm not going to the cinema to see these movies.
For $10 tickets.
I'll see them in a year's time when I don't have to pay anything for them. Because I'm paying $2 a month for Netflix or Stan or whatever it comes on, because it'll be on one of them soon enough.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's a big raspberry noise for that one. The only other stuff I've got here is for stuff that's recently come out. The Justice League movie
I'm seeing is a thing tonight. That
you can...
Yeah.
Oh, are you? Mm-hmm. I have not seen it yet, but hopefully in the next couple of days. The basic review gist tends to be, it's very okay.
Yeah, I've heard that it's not the worst of the DC movies. But I've also heard it's nowhere near, it's not Wonder Woman level, which I think is the benchmark for your good DC movies. It fits somewhere between Batman vs Superman and Wonder Woman.
It's basically a critical non-failure, which WB is happy with, which is kind of telling.
Mm-hmm.
So that's out there. I'm sure it's the one thing about the movie,
it's going to be a movie where you're going to be like, if they just change like two or three things, it would be great. Just like Batman vs Superman, if you just edited a little bit here and there, just change, you just took out like one of these story threads, and then you switch this bit here, it would be a great movie. But nah, it wasn't, because it was just junk all over the place.
Yeah, the one thing that is undeniably terrible about the film, though, is remember how Henry Cavill had a mustache because he was filming another movie at the same time, and they said, yeah, we can just digitally edit it out. It did not work out very well.
Does it not look good?
No, I'm going to forward you a screenshot on the Facebooks, because that's where I have it. It just looks wrong.
Whoa, that does not look like Henry Cavill.
It basically looks like, firstly, it looks like Quagmire. It seems like what they've done is, instead of digitally editing out his mustache and sort of manually drawing in his upper lip. They've basically just moved his mouth up.
Yeah, it looks like a shitty Snapchat filter.
Yeah, that's shifted your mouth and just left a blank space between that and your chin. Yeah,
they should have just kept Superman's moustache.
Yeah, they should have. I mean,
like, he'd come back from the dead. He's obviously going to be wearing his black suit, because how can they not? Just give him the mullet, give him a moustache. Awesome. Yeah. It all plays.
Didn't he have... He had the mullet and a beard when he was revived in the comics?
Yeah, so just make him... like, just get rid of the beard, because, you know, moustaches are cooler. And just leave him with, like, a kick-ass moustache.
I mean, even then, you could just wrap a fake beard around the moustache.
Yeah. You could just darken his cheeks up, make give him some stubble there. But,
yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, they would have been so much better just letting him keep the facial hair. Okay, so Rebirth of Superman, he did not have the beard or mustache. But in more recent comics, when Classic Universe Superman came in as kind of a stealth Superman alongside the New 52 one, he had a version of the black suit and like a full beard. And it was a much better and daddier look than... it could have been otherwise, but then they shaved it off, which was very sad, because I was like, oh, maybe they'll actually change the way Superman looks once. Nope. So, yeah. Mustache, terrible. Movie, maybe passable. But other guys that dress all in black and have facial hair, The Punisher, that came out.
Oh, yeah. I've only watched the first episode, but boy, did I like it.
I have not watched any. I saw the intro sequence, and that's it.
I like the intro sequence.
I think it's boring. I've thought that about a couple of the recent ones. Looking at it, it's very clinical, which makes me wonder if they had perhaps a more explicit one that they had to walk back after the recent shooting events in America. In the same way that they did not release the trailer, I wouldn't be surprised if they had something that was a bit more blood and gory and they had to reverse it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I liked it. I thought it was all right. But then, you know, the what they've done with all of their intros has made them very stylized, very kind of like arty. They're not, then, you know, it's all in the eye of the beholder type stuff, so it won't please everyone. But I've liked pretty much all of them so far. Except
the Daredevil one I really liked.
Iron Fist one was
Daredevil.
Weird.
Daredevil was good because it was very stylistic and had great music. Jessica Jones was great because they had the comic aesthetic to draw on. Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Defenders, I found all kind of I don't know, maybe it's because they don't have a strong kind of imagery to pull from for any of those characters, but it didn't hit home as well.
Like I said, beach their own, because they're very, like, you know, kind of, they're not... they're all different, and they try and make them a bit more, yeah, like, arty and stuff for each of the different characters.
Yeah. Although, to be honest, after giving them such distinct styles, was it just me, or did the Defenders one feel very bland by comparison?
Yeah, but then you because you've got so many, you're pulling from all the other ones, I didn't expect it to be, like, super standout.
Yeah, well, see, before the Defender series dropped, I saw sort of preview coverage that described it as, you know, the faces being pulled out of the map of Manhattan with the streets buzzing and flowing like arteries pumping blood, which was a very evocative image, but not really what was delivered. I think someone got a little bit excessive in their description compared to what it actually was, which was a light up map at the end.
Yeah, I still liked it.
Yeah, I was disappointed, but that's okay. I'll watch Punisher eventually. I meant to catch up for the first two episodes so I can watch it with my housemate here in Melbourne, but last night I just sat in bed watching episodes of the DC TV shows instead.
The first episode's quite good. It's post Daredevil Punisher. He is not, he's basically, like, you know, very, keeping a very down low life. He's got big beard. He's very quiet. One of the characters even says, you know, like, a bunch of the characters kind of make fun of him because he just doesn't react to people. He doesn't talk to them, and everyone like gives him shit. And one of the characters even says, "Oh, you know, they all think you're a retard." And he doesn't faze him whatsoever. Like, he doesn't care. He's just keeping to himself, trying to deal with his own shit. So, but they're going very heavy with the like, this isn't just a dude going out and, you know, like, he's not a nutter. He's like quite seriously dealing with very serious shit and trying to cope with it. And shit just keeps kind of like falling at his feet, which he can't, you know, because Punisher's not necessarily, he's not a bad guy per se. He does bad, he does bad things, for good reasons. So the morality of that, you can argue up and down all the time, but ultimately, like, he's not an evil person, but he's not a good person.
Yeah.
The difference between good and evil, so the difference between, like, yeah, good and bad, and like evil and not evil. There's a difference.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not enthused for the series, as I've mentioned. I'll give it a chance, because by comparison, I was enthused for Iron Fist, and we all know how that ended.
I'm more excited about Punisher, though. I like the character of Punisher a lot more than I like Iron Fist. So
I've never gotten into him.
Yeah, I love Punisher. He was the best bit about Daredevil season 2.
He was definitely a good part of that. I just find, for the comics at least, that's usually where I draw my sort of enthusiasm or lack of enthusiasm for the characters. Punisher just feels like such a product of, like, the 90s Marvel Max type stuff. It's like edgy, which, to be fair, that's also how we got Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like that was a bit more nuanced. I'll give it a try. We can circle back and talk about it a bit more extensively once we've both seen more than nothing or one episode. To be fair, I have seen part of one scene from the second episode when I walked into the lounge room the other night. And my only takeaway was that for a man with such a big and bushy beard, it's weird that he has a wax smooth chest. Because I'm pretty sure he had a hairy chest in Daredevil. I'm sure they had a scene where he had his shirt off. They always do. It seems like her suit from the neck up, and that's it.
I don't recall the status of his body hair.
Yeah, I just know John Bernthal is not a Ken doll man. He's a big hairy Italian dude. He's Italian, I think. Mm-hmm. Italian or Greek. He's got something from the hairy side of Europe in him.
From the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's nice that the Punisher took time out from his busy murdering schedule to go get a back, sack, and crack done.
It's important to look good. You look good, you feel good.
Exactly. No chafing on that body armor.
He burns his body armor.
Ooh, does he?
Like 2 minutes in.
Ooh.
Mm.
Give him the costume and then get rid of it.
Like, basically, this isn't a spoiler because it's literally the first 2 minutes of the first episode, but he completes his mission to take out the people that killed his wife and kid.
Mm.
And then he burns his gear and then just lays low. But of course, you can't just lay low when you're living in New York and there's bad guys everywhere. You're in
episode 1 of your Netflix series.
Yeah, and there's bad guys everywhere and shit, of course, is going to drop at your feet, whether you want it to or not, because you're the Punisher. And, you know, boy, here he goes punishing again.
Yeah. I did hear that in the first two episodes, there's a pretty good count of punishings.
There's some punishings in the first episode. The opening, like, a few minutes is like a montage of him finishing his stuff up. There's some great, great shots in it. So, yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll circle back once we're a bit deeper in the punishing. But otherwise, I think that pretty much brings us to the close of this week's episode.
Yeah.
So, thank you, as always, for tuning in to your weekly on-time, on-target dose of the Indoorsman podcast, your podcast guide to the great indoors that's always on time, every time.
Hmm.
Always.
Like clockwork. Like Japanese trains.
That's us.
Mm-hmm.
They say, we got to run these trains just like the Indoorsman podcast. Exactly. And they have been saying that for however many years the bullet train's been around.
Like 30 years they've been running the bullet train, like our one-year-old podcast.
They've just been mirroring our experience for the past 30 years.
Yeah. With that influential and that on time, that it just transcends all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you like our opening and closing music, it's called Fuck Sidechain Compression on Game Boy by Rocky W. You can find that at Bandcamp. And of course, you can Google him and the name all over the place, and it'll take you to a whole bunch of different sites.
A musical classic, just like a classic podcast that's been around for 30 years, because that's how long podcasts have existed for.
We were the first one. Sides of pyramids.
Fun fact. Yeah.
Prophesizing our, I was going to say return, but beginning.
Yeah, I'm still looking through Giza trying to find the posts for the endorsement on the Great Pyramids, but I'll get there. But if you don't want to search the side of ancient monuments that I don't think you're allowed to go near anymore, you can instead find us online on the internet at endorsementpodcast.com, at endorsementpod on Twitter and Instagram, and the same on Facebook as well also.
If you want to contact us on Twitter, you can get me at Cliff and Monkey and Matt at Ponk. And if you want to send us an email, you can get to us at contact@endorsementpodcast.com.
Yes, and just to derail for a second, if you do say hello to me on Twitter, be aware that my Twitter feed has been super gay for the past week, because thankfully the Australian people voted yes on marriage equality, and I just wanted to put that in there because I'm very happy about it, and also I've been rainbow colouring the episode numbers for the past few episodes.
Have you really?
I have.
Nice.
So, we would like you to do these things, which are subscribing, reviewing, and rating this podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and Podbean and all those other ones. Also Spotify, which I found out can do podcasts, so I might see about getting us on there. Because that kind of feedback helps us make this show better for you, better for us, and better for getting out into the public eye. So do those things.
But for now, he's been Matt.
And he has been Cliff. And by endorsement tradition, we'll send you off by saying something. Hopefully those weird tongue sounds I just made did not translate to the microphone.
Well, I heard them.
Oh, you're welcome. Oh, is this another ASMR moment?
Nope.
Is it?
Nope. Volume down. Can't hear what he's saying. Blissful white noise. Juicy.
Alright, bye.
For real, I turned it down though.
That seems fair. Right. Okay, so in tradition of endorsement, audio trauma.